Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. And on QSO this week, Charlie Emerson, N4OKL from the Huntsville Ham Fest. He's the vice president of the Huntsville Ham Fest, and we'll be talking all about Huntsville coming up this weekend. Also, Keith Miller of the Stones River Amateur Radio Club in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Keith is also the ARES coordinator for Rutherford County. Also joining us, Richard Lenore, KI5DX, and he is with the Paris Amateur Radio Group in Paris, Texas. And he's going to be sharing with us about their up-and-coming Hamfest and their group, all brought to you by TW Antenna Company, Bob Heil and Heil Sound, and Gigaparts. Coming up on QSO.
The TW2010 is a most unique ham radio antenna. The TW2010 covers five bands, 10, 12, 15, 17, and 20 meters. The TW2010 is not just a small portable antenna that assembles in about 5 minutes. The TW2010 is a great DX antenna with a very low angle of radiation. How low is that takeoff angle, you may ask? How about 26 degrees? The TW2010, with its stealth quality black powder coating, tends to disappear in its surroundings. This is the perfect antenna if you live in an area where outside antennas are restricted. The TW2010 gives you the advantage of stealth and high performance at the same time. You simply must see this antenna. The TW2010 is a sleek, professional-looking antenna that's very economically priced. Go to twantennas.com. That's twantennas.com. And look for the Gordon West review of the TW2010 in this September issue of CQ Magazine.
I want to say hello to Charlie Emerson, N4OKL. And Charlie is with the Huntsville Ham Fest. And I'm going to let you tell, Charlie, what your association is with it and your official position and a little bit about the Huntsville organization.
Okay, Ted, we really appreciate you guys doing this show for us, and any advertisement or any goodwill that we can spread from the Huntsville Ham Fest, we'll certainly do that. We're billed as the world's friendliest ham fest, and we certainly try to live up to that. My name is Charlie Emerson. The call is N4OKL. I'm good on QRZ. Anybody that like to look up and see what's going on, the Huntsville Ham Fest has been going since 1980. And it's steadily grown, and we have changed locations several times, and we have currently what we consider to be one of the better venues in the Ham Fest arena, so to speak. We have 80,000 square feet, all inside, air conditioned. We have 320 flea market tables. We have vendors that are coming from all over the place. We had a big show last year. We had between 5,000 and 6,000 people. Closer to 6 would be my opinion. And we had just a really good show. And we're particularly blessed here in this area because of the technical fields that are here. You know, we got a lot of space and rocket and defense and electronics and all of that, and we have a lot of high-profile individuals that are able to do forums for us here. We honestly do think that our forum schedule is equal to or better than any that you can find anywhere, and we try not to brag a whole lot about that, but it is the truth. We have some of the finest forums that you'll hear anywhere. We have vendors from all over. We've got a vendor coming in from California this year. We have people coming in from Florida, all parts of the United States, and we have folks coming here. We've got some international folks that will be here this year as well. We've got the YLRL International Convention this year, which I understand that it has been held east of the Mississippi. One time it was in Cleveland back years and years and years ago. And so we're very tickled and just happy as we can be to do that. We had a group of folks from an international group, the GAREC group, that came over last year from Europe, and it's the Global Amateur Radio Emergency Communication Conference, and that was the first time last year that it was ever held in the United States, so we were tickled about that too. So we try to plan a ham fest that has interest for just about everybody. in the amateur radio hobby, and also some things there. We have several different people that do vendors that have other than radio equipment. We try to provide an opportunity for all the guys to be able to buy some peace offerings for their XYLs and all of that, and we do have some other things other than radio equipment, and we have all the major manufacturers coming this year. We got Icom, Yaesu, Kenwood. We got Tentec and Flex Radio this year. We had Elecraft last year on problems this year. They weren't able to be with us. And so we have a Hamfest here that I believe that holds interest for just about everybody. We've got a good venue, like I say, all inside, air conditioned. You know, as it is in Alabama in August, it's going to be hot. So that's a little bit about the Hamfest. The organization of the Hamfest, what that amounts to is that there's a core group of people that really do make the decisions about the Huntsville Hamfest. I'm one of those. Don Tunstall is the president of the Huntsville Hamfest Association. I'm the vice president. We have Dave Givens, who is the flea market chairman. We have Craig Simmons, who's our prize committee chairman. We have Johnny Winter and Chuck Lewis, who head up the committee to for our forums committee, and Art Davis is our layout guy. He's been doing it for years and years and years, and he does the layout and presents that to the Von Braun Center to locate where people are and how to get to their booths and all of that. So we're proud of the Huntsville Ham Fest. We're trying to grow the Huntsville Ham Fest, and we'd like to invite everybody that is listening to the Huntsville Ham Fest. If you can't make it this year, then you might try remembering, if you can, and if you can write down WA5KUB.com, WA5KUB.com. Tom Medlin, his call is W5KUB. He's changed his call recently. But Tom comes to Huntsville from Memphis. He will start his program, and it's a live webcam, a live broadcast webcast of the Huntsville Ham Fest, and he'll start that in Memphis. He'll actually do it on the trip here. He webcasts from the car. When he gets to the Huntsville Ham Fest, he comes around and he does and he interviews folks and you know, he likes to see what's going on before the Ham Fest and of course during the Ham Fest. So if you'll tune in to WA5KUB.com and watch the Huntsville Ham Fest. And also one other thing that we might add is that this year we're doing something that we think here is going to be a first in ham radio. And you know, I'll tell you what, in the Hamfest arena, as many Hamfests as there are all over the United States and everywhere, we think that we're going to have a first by we're going to offer a prize to a virtual attendee, and that'll be a person's name that'll be drawn from a list of folks that are listed into the chat room. We're excited about that, and we know that it's going around all over the world, so there's no telling who will win the prize. We'll have some people that will draw the name, and then we'll have a semifinal drawing and then a final drawing on Saturday afternoon. So it's one of those things that we're just proud of, and we're tickled to death to be able to offer that situation to folks that can't attend the Huntsville Ham Fest. Of course, we'd like to have everybody here, but if you can't come, then go to WA5KUB.com and see what happens. If anybody needs any information about the Huntsville Ham Fest, go to www.hamfest.org, hamfest.org, and you can get a list of the forums there. You can see the dealer layout from last year. We don't have the new one up yet because we still got people coming in to the Huntsville Ham Fest, and we try to We try to get everything over with by this time, but if people continue to want to, vendors want to come to the Huntsville Ham Fest, then they certainly can, and by getting in touch with us. And so we got an excellent prize list this year. We've got an excellent lineup of vendors and things that'll be of interest to just about everybody. So anybody that can, please come on, and we'll roll out the Southern hospitality. And when we say that we're billed as the world's friendliest ham fest, we certainly try to live up to that to the best that we can. So anybody that can, come on. If not, go to wa5kub.com, and you'll be able to virtually attend the ham fest as well. So Ted, if you want to go ahead, if you got any questions, go ahead.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, I remember the one year we attended, we were there Saturday, but we had to go back Sunday for some reason, and I remember being logging in and watching the webcam, and it was really fun, because it was a friend of mine that was still there, and I called him on the cell phone, and I said, you get out in front of that camera and wave at us here, you know. And it was really cool. You know, I'm wondering in the future if you wouldn't have a situation where, you know, somebody can go buy a table and display all the items, and then people in the chat room could bid on the items. Wouldn't that be wild?
That would be wild. We hadn't thought of that. I'll tell you, Tom Medlin, he's such a good guy too, and his son Chris, and they, you know, if we were to pose that to him, I'm sure he'd do that in a heartbeat. He's such a good guy. He's the one that came up with the idea of a virtual attendee prize, and so you know, I was kind of surprised, really, to be honest with you. He offered that to Dayton, and for some reason they did not do it. Well, man, let me tell you, I jumped on that right away. I can see where that could create some excitement, you know, for folks. And what it is, the prize this year is nothing. It's no small prize. It's an excellent watt meter. It's a Diamond SX1000 that does daylight to dark, UHF, VHF, and HF as well. And so we're real proud to be able to do that. And that prize will be donated by Gigaparts here in Huntsville, Alabama. And we're real proud of the Gigaparts store that we do have here, and of course we're proud of all of the people that participate with us, all of our vendors, all of our and all of the people that attend the Ham Fest. We just we've got a good venue here. We've got a good place to have a Ham Fest, especially in August when it's so hot and all of that. So we're just really glad to present the Huntsville Ham Fest to you guys. And Ted, I tell you, I appreciate you doing this with us as well. And anytime you need any information or anything about the Huntsville Ham Fest, please don't hesitate to let us know what you need, and we'll certainly try to roll the red carpet out for you guys.
Well, most folks are aware of where Huntsville is, but why don't we talk just for a second about the talk-in frequencies. When folks get into town, run into trouble, where should they go?
Okay, we got an excellent crew that does that, and they've been doing it for a long time. Steve Jones actually is the gentleman that does that, and the talk-in crew they've been doing it for so long, it's just unbelievable. And what it is, the 146.94. And for the Ham Fest, what they do is they knock off all the PL tones and all of that. So we got a good talk-in crew, and go to 146.94, which is the flagship, repeater of the Huntsville Amateur Radio Club and the repeater club here in town. And so it's one of those things that we're real proud of, the crew that does that. I'm looking over our website right now to see if we do have that on the website. I'm sure that we do somewhere. We just take it for granted that it's there. And if you do go to our Ham Fest, look around on the website there, and I'm sure you'll find the talk in there. So it'll be not a hard thing to do. It's the Von Braun Center is where we're located, and of course, if you got a GPS, it's You know, you can look it up and be able to find Huntsville pretty quick. So it's if you get close to Huntsville, anywhere close to Huntsville, that repeater has a real big footprint. So 146.94 will be the main. In case anything happened to it, we do have a backup repeater, and it's a 147.300. So and no PL tone on any of them. So 146.94 is the main talk in frequency.
Well, very, very good. Charlie, I thank you so much for sharing with us here and talking with us. And, of course, all of us from QSO, we're going to be there. And the folks from the TW Antenna Company are going to be there. That I know that. And I know that Bob Heil is going to be there. And we know Gigaparts is going to be there. So, and all the rest of the good folks and all the forums and everything in the flea market area, we're really looking forward to it. Every time I visited Huntsville, it's been a wonderful ham fest and one of my absolute favorites. So,
well, thank you so much, and we appreciate more than we can say you guys saying that and attending the ham fest, and we really appreciate everything that you guys do, and thank you so much. That this has been a good experience for me and hopefully for the Huntsville Ham Fest. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Kentucky. Meet Atlanta.
Our guest is Keith Miller, and Keith is with the Rutherford County Amateur Radio Club, and I'm going to let you cue us in on the proper name. His call sign is N9DGK, and they have a very active ARES, and Keith, I want to say hello and welcome aboard.
Well, hello to you, Ted, and thank you. I appreciate it very much. The Amateur Radio Club here, first of all, we're located in Rutherford County, Tennessee, which is just southeast of Nashville on the way to Chattanooga. And the Amateur Radio Club is the Stones River Amateur Radio Club. And the call site for that, or call sign for that club is K4FUN, K4FUN. And we also have an ARES organization in Rutherford County, which is called the Heart of Tennessee ARES, or Hot ARES for short. And we picked that name simply because Rutherford County just happens to be the geographic center of the state of Tennessee. So it made something that was easy for us to be able to use and to remember, and something that would uniquely identify the group here in this county. And the ARES organization here in Rutherford County, I've been able to talk to some folks who still live here from years back and some who have moved away, but I've been able to track its history back through 1970 for sure, and probably much earlier than that. But I've talked to and met one of the folks who was emergency coordinator for the ARES group here starting about 1970, who's now he's a public information officer for the Georgia State ARES organization down in Atlanta. And it's been kind of interesting doing that.
Well, you know, you folks have a real active ARES group, and you're extremely involved in Skywarn. And I had the pleasure of talking with you some time ago, and you began to explain to me a system that you had in place, or had put in place, and it was real intriguing because it was extremely organized, and it seemed like it made things a lot smoother running, and was able to allow folks to navigate ARES and all the different operations that are involved during weather emergencies and whatnot. And before I want to talk about the Stones River Club. I want you to tell us all about that. But tell us a little bit about the system, or the things you were telling me about. And the system may be the wrong terminology, so I'll let you get into this a little bit.
Okay, well, I'm a reasonably new emergency coordinator. I've only been at this position for about 2 years now, I guess, maybe. And so when I took the position, didn't see a whole lot of documentation. We did have some as far as a simplified method of understanding what the ARES mission was here in Rutherford County, which was to support, you know, served agencies that we would work with and support governmental agencies as we were requested. But about that time is when things really began to change as far as the relationship between acknowledgement of amateur radio emergency services with Department of Homeland Security, Federal Emergency Management Agency. Those things had been building for a while since 2001. But about 2 years ago, it kind of came to a head when Congress, by passing a law that really was just to update the responsibilities of the Department of Homeland Security, actually acknowledged the Amateur Radio Emergency Service nationwide as a non-governmental organization equivalent to first responders, which put them in a little bit more of a spotlight across the country. And so not only here in Rutherford County, but in all areas organizations across the United States, the passage of that law brought to the forefront the one of the main purposes of amateur radio in its full scale of operation, and that is to provide public and emergency service to the, you know, to people in the United States when and as they need it. Most of those people do it by using their own equipment, dedicating their own time to make sure that they have proper equipment and proper support to be able to go out and do that on a volunteer basis. And some of them have gotten to the point to where the only reason they're not considered professional is because they're not being paid for it, which by law they can't be. So that was one of the first things. So as we began looking at the organization of our group here, we started looking at organizations around the United States that had information available that we could access on the Internet to see if, number one, what some of the criteria were of other organizations throughout the country, what would apply to our area here, because we have the combination of both large urban areas and a lot of rural area that may not necessarily be involved in something like a hurricane. But as the years have gone by, we seem to have more activity with tornadoes in our area. And the interesting point that where we are here in the middle of Tennessee, where on the eastern edge of the major impact area of a large-scale earthquake from the New Madrid Fault going along the Mississippi River, and also have a secondary fault line that runs up the western edge of the Appalachian Mountains into the Smokies, for which there is activity that's pretty much ongoing all the time. And so those unique characteristics of this area seem to me to dictate that we probably needed to put a few more things in place to help us handle that and define not only what kind of an organization we would like to be, but what we would like our structure to be. And once we define that structure and define the goals that are inside that structure, then begin to work toward the fulfilling of those goals. And of course, the first thing for us was to be able to, we already had an active Skywarn group here in this area, working off of a wide area repeater link system. We're able to help cover a larger area here and still serve the immediate county area. And it also would allow us to link into other areas, groups around the areas in adjacent counties, as well as in depth to the Alabama line. We could actually go to the Tennessee or to the Mississippi River, which would be the western border of the state, and had the ability to be able to go to the eastern side of the state as well, as far up as the Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee borders. So we had the capability to do wide area operations, but also allow us to do in-county operations, which would be our primary operational capability that we would want to be driving for to begin with. And so we put together an organizational set of documentation that would allow us to do that, to describe how things would move, what our standards would be as far as technical standards for radio operation, any kind of mobile command vehicles, et cetera. And it took us a while to find and to determine how we wanted to do that, but we were successful in doing that, and we're now putting that into use here. And it's been a while in coming, but it's finally here.
Well, you know, you brought up something really interesting, and that is you talked about tornadoes. You also talked about earthquakes, and a lot of folks in Middle Tennessee and throughout the midsection of the United States, they don't think much about earthquakes because there just hasn't been that much activity. It's not like living in Los Angeles where you're used to having the bed roll over instead of you. So this is something, though, that is just as real as rain, because these faults are there and they are active and they are moving around and they're doing things. So that opportunity presents itself, and being prepared for that is not necessarily the easiest thing to anticipate, much like when an unexpected twister comes through. And I mean, they can come through rather unannounced, and we've seen that. And it's very difficult to be prepared for these things. What we're going to do right now, we'll take a break. Our guest is Keith Miller. He's with the Stones River Amateur Radio Association. We'll be back with more from Keith right after this.
You might want to know, why is it that we talk about Heil microphones so much, or why do I need a Heil microphone? Here's Bob Heil talking about Heil microphones.
Let's talk microphones for a second. When you're in a situation like an emergency or disaster field day and you really want to punch through and you want something that's going to just cut through the mustard, so to speak, what's a good microphone to do that?
Well, we're talking about amateur radio. And, of course, the FCC dictates the fact that we'll be about 3 KCs wide, so you don't have a lot of bandwidth. Well, what we do is the microphone for that choice is a microphone that we tailor with it actually has a labyrinth inside it, Ted. It's an amazing little piece that I designed back in 1982. And this thing tunes 10 dB spike at about 2,500 cycles. I mean, it's just in your face. Not pretty sounding, but it cuts right through, rolls everything off under 600 cycles, everything off of it about 5K, with this great big spike right in the middle of the human voice, where we need to know, what did you say, an F or an S, a P or a B, to get that articulation. Because when we're out in the emergencies, or with we're just running a contest with a lot of noise and there's a lot of stations, that guy's going to be heard first, because all of his power is going to be right where the human ear wants to hear those important syllables. And that's what we've done for this industry, is create microphones that do that. We also have, of course, as you well know, microphones that work on the performance level. But for ham radio, it's a whole different ballgame, because we're only dealing with 2.5 to 3 KC wide bandwidth that the FCC will dictate to us. But the important thing is to get articulation through, and then we build that in microphones that you can hold in your hand, or we build it in headsets that you can wear and have hands-free, that kind of thing.
Well, now, of all the Heil models, which one is the most optimum for that sort of thing? Which one would you, if you were going to pick one today to operate field day, what would you pick?
Well, we build a number of things. That element is called an HC4, a Heil cartridge 4. That's got that big spike in it. And that HD4 we build in a headset, our ProSet 4. We build it in a microphone, which is the HM10 that has both elements in it, both that HD4 and the HD5, which is a real smooth rag-chew type thing. And we have it in our Goldmine, the GM4. And all of those products have the HD4 for ultimate communications. And then they have another element that you can switch in for when you're just talking to your buddies and you don't need all that that spike and that articulate sound to cut through noise and things. But we make the HD4 into a lot of different products because we make various headsets and microphones. And the HC4 is the one to do that with.
Of all the Heil mics, which ones do you find the HC4 cartridge in?
Well, we have the HM10, our Goldmine GM4. Those are both microphones. In fact, the GM4 looks like our PR20 that you see on the stages, but it has a push-to-talk switch in it, and it has both of these elements. It has the wideband element and the HC4. Then we also have the Handy Mic. And the Handy Mic 4, it's only 4 inches long that has this element in it, and that's what we use for a hand mic. It's just wonderful for communications for ham radio.
Before you make your next selection for a microphone for your new ham rig or your old ham rig, remember Heil Sound. That's heilsound.com. Or you can find them on our website at Ted Randall, TedRandall.com. And remember, Heil is spelled HEIL. That's HEIL, HeilSound.com.
Well, it came out of the sky, landing just a little south of Moline. Judge fell out of his track, I couldn't believe what he seen. He laid on the ground, shook, fearing for his life. Then he ran all the way to town, screaming, it came out of the sky.
Our guest is Keith Miller, N9DGK. He's with the Stones River Amateur Radio Association or Club, and very, very much alive and active in Aries. And we were just talking about the situation with earthquakes and things like that. I'm just curious as to how do you, at this point, how do you monitor that sort of thing, and what have you done in the way of preparation
that would be different, let's say, from handling a tornado? How have you kind of prepared to engage should the earth start to shake here?
Well, Ted, one of the things that we've done here, not so much in this county, but in the state of Tennessee, last year, we held a statewide exercise where myself and three or four others representing ARES, Amateur Radio Emergency Service, RACES, Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, and the military affiliate radio service, MARS, in this case Army MARS, went together to work in conjunction with the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency in an exercise to simulate what would happen if an earthquake were to occur in West Tennessee near the New Madrid Fault. What kind of impact would it have? What kind of infrastructure damage would we have? What kind of infrastructure problems we may have in trying to respond to that damage. And so in the working of that exercise, we went to the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency communications area where we had people from all levels of state and state government and regional medical services, the Tennessee National Guard together, and we were providing communications for them during that entire process of the exercise. So what actually happens is that you cannot run a full simulation of that exercise, so you take snippets of it, which means that when you go in, the activity is actually at the jump point. The activity happens, whatever the initial call is going to be that's going to affect all of this area. In this case, it was a 5.7 or 5.8 magnitude earthquake in that area that downed several bridges along the Mississippi River, including one major artery bridge in Memphis, damaged the airports, damaged bridges connecting West Tennessee with Middle Tennessee. And so then the process, obviously communications went down, cell towers were affected, so cell phone service was gone. Internet activity was was taken out immediately because of the damage to the infrastructure to that area. So the only radio activity that was available to begin with was amateur radio activity on HF. In this case, we were testing 60 meters. We were testing the software capabilities of the WinLink 2000 program with our MARS activity to find out what capabilities we would have in and out of an affected area, what capabilities we would have in bringing in assets and moving assets to an affected area, what impact that would have on the local infrastructure within the state and possibly even on a state on either side of it, trying to move a large influx of equipment and assets into a highly affected area like that. So that would be the immediate problem, and then obviously, as things move along, you're going to reestablish some things so that you have other forms of communication available. And so this was a three-day exercise. We would take, at certain points, maybe, say, a half day at a lunch break or something, come back, and we would jump 6 to 8 hours forward or jump 12 hours forward. And so you would come in the next morning, and the initial injection into the scenario that we had when we left was obviously one of the things that happens with an earthquake is an aftershock, which was almost as big as the initial shock, and everything that had been rebuilt the day before was taken down again, and so you had to begin that whole process over. That trickles down to the local areas where, in our discussions here in Rutherford County, and I know that at least in two or three other counties around us, in Davidson County, Williamson County, Wilson County, that folks in those counties, we were all having discussions about what impact that would have on us, even though we may not be in the initial impact area, what it would do for us, whether or not we would be feeling any of the tremors, whether it would have any impact on local infrastructure and ability to respond to that kind of devastation, how we would be able to make alternate routes to get to that area if we weren't able to go directly through the state because of bridges being dropped across the Tennessee River. Obviously, it cuts the western part of the state away from the center part of the state in several areas across the entire state of Tennessee. So if any of that infrastructure is lost or if it's damaged in some way, then you have to have alternate means to be able to get into an impacted area like that. What kind of services can you provide as far as immediate communications in and out, damage assessment reports so that contingencies can be made to help supplement that, whether or not you can get air traffic in or out. It's pretty comprehensive in the way that it does it. And so as we were establishing the documentation that we decided we were going to use for our county here in Rutherford County, it made us stop and think about what kind of parameters we wanted to establish that would give us not only a direction but give us the flexibility that we needed to respond in case that initial direction were not available to us. And that's something that every amateur radio emergency service group across the country deals with. There are several groups across the country that actually have emergency professionals who are members of those groups, and I've visited some, even one down in Florida, in Palm Beach County, that works directly with the EMA and has their own setup right there in the EMA center that's fully housed and able to withstand a hurricane, including blast doors on the building. So there's some very well prepared organizations, and we're trying to get to that point. The other thing that goes into looking at a fully functional organization is the alliances and the memorandums of understanding that are put in place to work with served agencies, such as emergency management agencies, hospitals for backup contingencies for communications for hospitals, Red Cross, county governments. We look at the big picture sometimes, statewide, regionally, nationally, et cetera, but that whole big picture has to begin with that particular localized area, in this case, a single county. And so we have to make the contingencies work for what we will need in our county and then be able to transfer that to what state assets may need to be allocated, and that's left up to the person who is in the position of being what's called the section emergency coordinator. In this case, that person has the responsibility for the entire state.
You know, these are, of course, this is a real, you know, it sounds very complicated. But without the organization ahead of time and people knowing exactly what they need to do and there being an actual predetermined plan, then it really doesn't do much good to jump into an emergency situation if you don't have those things, because then you're not effective. And even though it sounds very complex, I'm impressed with the fact that Keith has a grasp on this. Now, I'm hoping that other groups and clubs that are listening can kind of glean a little bit from what you're saying, because I know that in situations where you have the emergency takes place, it's kind of like, you know, the mind goes blank. You know, it's like, what do we do now? And it's so good to have all of this mapped out ahead of time, because then you can depend on that plan and the alternate plan and whatever the plan C is and plan D and so on and so forth. You can go down those paths, because in the emergency, folks are not thinking clearly. Now, I don't know. Have you found that to be the case? I mean, even in some of the exercises, that when you're placed under the pressure immediately,
something's happened and now you have to perform. Have you found that, folks tend to blank out a little bit and without a plan, they would be, you know, I guess I want to say grappling for what the correct thing to do at that moment?
Yes, that's true, Ted. It can happen. The beauty of having an organization like Amateur Radio Emergency Services or Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Services, which is the amateur radio part of what used to be the old civil defense system back in the early 50s, that allows the federal government, if it's needed in a national emergency, to allocate amateur radio frequencies. And those operators who are not trained or who are not identified as being a RACES member must cease operation unless they're assimilated into a RACES organization on a specialized privilege of operation, which is not very much the norm. But the beauty of these two organizations is that there are people who have been with those organizations for quite a number of years who have a lot of practical experience as well as what I would, for lack of a better term, call book knowledge. Okay, you can sit down, you can read it in a book, you can think about it, you can play it over in your mind on how it's going to happen, but until you're actually involved in it, it really doesn't come together all that well. So that's why you practice. And though practice makes perfect, it's not going to make everything perfect, because when the actual scenario raises its head, there are always things that are going to happen that you just simply cannot anticipate. I thought it was interesting. I was watching an ad on TV not too long ago, and the comment was that experience comes just after the point in which you need it. And so you take those experiences then, and they go back into your pool of learning knowledge and then put into a training scenario to allow you to prepare for an unexpected contingency that you might have had to face head on. Here in Tennessee, back in 2006, we had a series of tornadoes come through the Middle Tennessee area. I can't even remember the total number of them. But we were able to have radio operators on the air before the first tornado ever sat down on the ground. And in fact, an amateur radio operator from my county was one of the first to call and give information concerning a funnel cloud that had been spotted just before it sat down on the ground, so that not only in our county but in all the surrounding counties, we could alert those people that that weather system was coming in and that they could expect to have a high volume of traffic coming. And surely as there's little green apples in Indianapolis, we had several tornadoes sit down. There was not a lot of loss of life, but there was massive property damage. We did lose, I say there wasn't a lot, but as I think about it, I think there was maybe 23 or 24 casualties in that particular weather event that lasted for, I'm going to say, 12 to 14 hours as the front moved in before it cleared out and things could be defined. But the key point here is that within 3 to 5 minutes after the initial tornado sat down north and just a little west of us, communications infrastructure was completely lost, and the only infrastructure that was left standing throughout that entire operation was amateur radio. FM for VHF, UHF, and HF sideband, and Morse code or CW operations, and that was it for some 3 or 4 hours. And so stations outside the impact area were directly helping to correlate, relay, and provide communication support for emergency agencies in that impacted area until we could get their other means of communication reestablished so that they could go on and do what they needed to do. So it's very important to be able to do those kinds of things. We have contingencies made for weather events, for training that we do with the National Weather Service each year called Skywarn. We have contingency events or contingency plans that are being developed and soon to be published for the Emergency Management Agency here in this county, as well as damage assessment after the fact. That will allow us to enter, be injected into a circumstance without having a weather event and still fully operate in concert with the other agencies that we may have to interact with. And that's very important for everybody to have to do.
Let's take a quick break. I've got a couple questions on the other side. Our guest is Keith Miller, K9DGK, and he is with the Stones River Amateur Radio Group, and we'll be back with him right after this.
The TW2010 is a most unique ham radio antenna. The TW2010 covers five bands, 10, 12, 15, 17, and 20 meters. The TW2010 is not just a small portable antenna that assembles in about 5 minutes. The TW2010 is a great DX antenna with a very low angle of radiation. How low is that takeoff angle, you may ask? How about 26 degrees? The TW2010, with its stealth-quality black powder coating, tends to disappear in its surroundings. This is the perfect antenna if you live in an area where outside antennas are restricted. The TW2010 gives you the advantage of stealth and high performance at the same time. You simply must see this antenna. The TW2010 is a sleek, professional-looking antenna that's very economically priced. Go to twantennas.com. That's twantennas.com. And look for the Gordon West review of the TW2010 in this September issue of CQ Magazine.
We want to invite you to check out the website at www.tedrandall.com. That's www.tedrandall.com. All the programs and shows that you hear right here on QSO are available on the website for download as podcasts. We invite you to check them out and browse the site and find out interesting things at www.tedrandall.com.